Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's French Open Round 2 catch-up, sponsored by the Boodles.
Sinner stunned by Altmaier.
Ostapenko ousted by Stearns.
And Gael Monfils withdraws after an epic 5-set win.
Chris, today is the 1st of June and we are here to catch up on round two of the French Open at Tennis Weekly HQ. Well, I say Tennis Weekly HQ for the first ever time in the history of the Tennis Weekly podcast. You are recording live from a Grand Slam. You are at Roland Garros.
I am live here in Paris. I am right by Court Simone Mathieu at the moment. I'm in what they're calling a tech center, which is a table and a booth. I'm doing my best from the audio perspective here, but I'm loving it being here. And I think it's adds a little bit of extra fun to the fact that hopefully you can hear Cerundolo being serenaded by his Argentinian supporters as he's on court right now. So in the thick of it, Joel.
Oh, lovely, lovely stuff. Yes, because you flew over from Denmark. You've been there the last couple of days. Before we get into all the action that's happened, how have you been finding it? What's your experience been like of the event?
Well, so I haven't been for a couple of years. The last time I was here was 2019. And so I did skip kind of the pandemic episode of in October, and then I was
I think that was a wise decision,
I think. And then there was some ticketing kind of limitations that happened the following year, so it's back to normal. There's been a lot of innovation that's happened here in the court that I'm on. Susan Longlom, that is actually now, it's got a roof in the making. It's not finished yet, but they've essentially, the famous silhouette of sort of the arched sides, the almost coliseum like gladiator ring that it used to be, is now almost like the base of the Eiffel Tower. It's very steel based, and so that's something that's very different, is that now it almost feels like practicality is leading the way here at the French Open with two roofs by 2026. So that is something that's very exciting.
Very, very exciting. Yeah, I mean, what's the generally the crowd's been like? Has been good atmosphere walking around the courts? I know you like to kind of peer into the, yeah, what's going on the outside courts. What's it been like with all the other fans there?
It's such a great atmosphere. I think people who have maybe only been to Wimbledon would be surprised by just how sort of lively the French crowd is, whether they're booing someone just for asking for a line call to be checked, or kind of turning on their own players if they're not playing well enough. I think it is quite a unique slam in that respect. And there's so many people who have turned out for this event, and it's only kind of grown since I've been coming here. So I think it's one where the vibe is great, but I do have to admit, have I stayed on my stadium ticket? No, I haven't. I've been out watching Sloan. I skipped Sabalenka. Sorry to our listeners. I'm the ultimate Sloan stan. I couldn't not. And watching her play on clay.
You were rewarded.
I was. I mean, that's why I thought I can't leave, because this might be one of the few chances to watch Sloan win a match. It does get a bit dicey at times for her, but it was fantastic. And I think she's playing some of her best tennis. And the strangest thing was, then I saw her being interviewed on one of the setups they have here, and she was in a beanie and a hoodie, and it's literally 30 degrees. So that is confusing to me. But I've also got to see some of the doubles. I saw Alicia and Olivia, Nichols and Barnett from Team GB, that we got to speak to at the Billie Jean King Cup, who just lost in such a close match. They were playing against one of your favorites, Trevisan, but that was such a great match to watch. And I actually probably spent maybe two sets worth of time on Susan Longlong. So I've been trying to take it all in for our listeners.
Well, I mean, it's been it's been an interesting tournament so far, particularly because of, I think, some of the stories from the home, you know, from the home players, as well as a lot of the top seeds falling out, which we're going to be getting onto in a sec. But I want to give a word, first of all, to Gael Monfils, because his match was still going on in our last recording with myself and Kim. He came through against Sebastian Baez in round one, 7-5 in the fifth, went past midnight. For me, it was the first truly epic night session match that actually kind of lived up to its billing. But unfortunately, he's had to pull out of round two. He was scheduled to face Holger Rune tonight in the night session. A few words on Gael Monfils from you in terms of that result, that performance against Sebastian Baez, and then to go from such a high to what must feel such a crushing low, I think, you know, with a wrist injury forcing you out, given all of kind of the physical ailments, I think, that Monfils has been through of late, and let's be honest, throughout his career.
Well, we were all absolutely gutted at the fact that he had to withdraw, because that's the last thing that you want to see, because he'd had such a high moment and he's on the front of every single paper here in Paris. And everyone was so hyped up for that match. I mean, Monfils versus Holger Rune, one of the ultimate entertainers in the game at the moment. That was going to be another night session.
Holger Rune versus the French crowd on a night match. I was licking my lips at that prospect.
And I mean, there were going to be scenes. If he wants a line checked or a mark checked, I think the French will make it known, won't they? As I've said. So I think, but for Gael, it's such an unfortunate thing. But the nature of the fact is that he hasn't been playing Grand Slam tennis. It's five sets, and he was pushed his body to the absolute limit. So we hope, and he did say it was one of the highlights of his entire career, that match. And we hope that the memory of such an incredible thing will be able to be the thing that lives on for him from this, as opposed to not being able to continue, because he's kind of in that Andy Murray camp now. We want Grand Slam highs, but we also are aware they're not going to win the Slam. But either way, I mean, it is gutting for him and gutting for the fans.
I will always have that like lasting image of him just kind of pulling up his shorts because his legs were just like concrete towards the end of the match. I mean, he even got, I think, a time violation because of how long he was taking between points. But really, I feel like disappointing for everyone not to see Monfils actually take to the court in the second round. I mean, moving on to today's action, we had a real big shock result. Yannick Sinner is out. He lost to Daniel Altmaier in five sets. 5 hours, 26 minutes. He saved two match points. He needed a really long 12-minute game to close it out at the end. You watched majority of this match. Are you still in shock by this result? Because I think a lot of people were thinking, you know, with Daniel Medvedev out on this side, I think Yannick Sinner was the only top 10 player left in his quarter. This felt like this was going to be potentially Yannick Sinner's moment.
It really did. And I was there watching almost all of that match. And what was so gutting about that was that it was a match that in no way he should have lost. He didn't stick to the game plan and he got quite passive at times and made a lot of unforced errors. And it's one of those matches where you just realize that some of those players are a cut above who can win those matches even when they're not playing well. And it was really frustrating. I mean, I was sitting with some hardcore Sinner fans and watching
him. Was it
him,
the Carotta boys?
They didn't get into the stadium. I was looking for them. I DM'd them, Joel. I got a response, but maybe I should have given them my seat when I popped out. because I think, or maybe they had to board their flight back thinking that they wouldn't have to be here for that long, but no carrots in sight. And maybe that's why it didn't go well. They were the lucky charm.
They have caused a media frenzy. I thought if I was the, you know, the French Open PR team, I'd be getting them back for all the Sinner matches.
I mean, there's no way in the Australian Open or the US Open that you wouldn't get them in there. They'd find a way. They can squeeze a few more in.
Carotta boys gone global. I can see it now.
I actually do think that we will forget that they were about Yannick Sinner. They might be at Eurovision next year, maybe. Who knows? I can see it. Another crossover. See what Kim has to say about that on the next podcast. But I mean, I was shocked, but at the same time, from watching the match, it was a case that Altmaier did play above the level he has ever played before. I mean, he played out of his skin. He got the ball back in play.
To be fair to him, he has got to the fourth round of the French Open before. He did that back in 2020. So he does know his way around. He does know his way around a clay court.
He played the big points much better. He knew when he had to push. He knew when to give Sinner the chance to miss a shot by varying the pace, varying the spin. And he really did go for the backhand at times on really key points. He flanked it out down the line. And for me, I didn't know he had those kind of weapons. And it didn't, from a spectator's perspective, looked like a clay courter playing against one of the biggest hitters in the game. He neutralized a lot of Yannick Sinner's points and also then his confidence, which is what happened in that final set, because that 6-1 set, that should have been a 6-1, a 6-2, a 6-3 straight sets win, but he lost concentration.
Is there a bigger story here around Sinner and Grand Slams? Because a lot of people talking about his record in five setters at Grand Slams, particularly, I think, from winning positions. I mean, you look at, you know, him against Novak Djokovic at Wimbledon when he was two sets up, lost in five sets. He was two sets to one up against Carlos Alcaraz at the US Open in 2022, lost that in five. And then today, from being two sets to one up, does he have an issue with closing it out? Is it a physical thing in terms of fitness and he can't last the distance? What do you think it is about Sinner that seems to be a kind of a stumbling block for him in Grand Slams?
Unfortunately, it's between the ears. It has to be. I mean, I've seen some really interesting studies in terms of the quality of ground stroke, and he actually comes top on the whole tour. And so if you do have the best ground strokes in the game and you've got a pretty decent serve and he knows his way around the net, there's no reason why you wouldn't be going much deeper in these tournaments and coming through in those clutch moments, because you have the game. And it's not like he has a technical failure on either wing. So for me, it's between the ears. Physically, he looked like he was still able to compete. If that match kept going, he would be able to keep playing. But I don't think he would have necessarily got the win because of, you know, the way that he isn't able to keep his composure, because he does go off the ball. He slows down the pace. I'd love to see a stat about the break points and the 30 all points, how he plays them, because I saw him in Rome last year against Fognini, and it was all Fognini, whether he made the shot or whether he missed it. Sinner kind of waited. He didn't pull the trigger. And I think if I was Darren Cahill, I kept thinking this, I would have loved him to go out, but hitting his shots. But don't go out having regrets for the fact you didn't go for it, because he really didn't.
Yeah, I think that's a shame. It's almost like he doesn't want to kind of die wandering, and I think he needs to have that mentality.
He goes within himself. Yeah, you've got to leave it all on the court, and I feel like he'll feel he didn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll have to, you know, wait and see. But yeah, this is definitely going to be a very sore loss for Jannik Sinner. But I mean, it has blown this part of the draw even wider open. We had Daniil Medvedev obviously go out, now had Jannik Sinner go out. So it means that one of these players is going to be reaching the semi-finals at Roland Garros. It could be Altmaier, it could be Dimitrov, Zverev, Molcan, Tiafoe, Choric, Echeverry, Nishioka, or Wild. So it is very, very open. Who do you think could profit from Jannik Sinner not being there? Because I look at Zverev, and obviously his form last year carried him through to a semi-final. He feels like he's in the perfect position, but he's obviously not at that level that he was playing at last year.
Yeah, I mean, previously we would have always said that we would have kind of thought that he would be the logical choice in that sort of sense. But for me, I think Tiafoe has kind of shown over the last few slams that he's played that he's able to step up and kind of get some of those wins and push himself a little bit further, such as the semi-final, obviously, which he had in the US. So I think he's someone I would look at. I think Choric is someone who we've seen some good form from him recently. I'd love for him to go deep at a major. But still, there's enough competition in there that I think that it's not like it's completely blown open. We still have seeds. It's not like some parts of the women's draw now where, I mean, it really is a free-for-all. I think there still is a natural hierarchy there. So I'm not going to predict that one of the lesser-known names like Altmaier is going to get there, because, one, the physical toll it's taken him, but also I think over five sets, the know-how of some of the players there, I think, will get them through.
And I think no one is to me personally, no one is talking about Grigor Dimitrov. He had a very handy win for me, what looked like, against Emil Ruusuvuori. I thought he was potentially going to come unstuck there, but came through in straight sets. So, yeah.
Don't get too excited. Don't jinx it. We always get too excited about Dimitrov. We think he's back,
right?
And then he doesn't. So.
But yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see how that develops. I mean, as you said, looking on the women's side, today we've had Świątek, Rybakina and Jabeur all through in straight sets. Świątek came through, I think, 6-4, 6-love. It was a little bit scratchy again, I think, that first set. I still think her service games are very vulnerable.
You've got to go after that second serve. You really have to have a chance.
And it's there for the taking.
Everyone knows it now, that you've got to make more than you miss and try and shorten the points. And there's a clear game plan against playing Iga now. But yeah, I mean, I was at Rybakina first on Susan Long this morning. And I think her margin is the most impressive thing that I saw, is that she has a big serve she can rely on mostly. We know the service percentage has been an issue, but she's hitting really big and just hitting to big spaces. So she's actually finishing an awful lot of points on overheads or at the net. And I think that's something that she's working the point. And I think that's something that's so underrated from some of the players that I've seen so far from being here, is that she's willing to not hit the winner on the first shot, which early in her career, she probably would have gone for a bigger shot. And I think it's that margin that's so important and allows her to play such great front foot tennis. So I don't want to, again, as I say, kind of predict something, because all of my predictions are gone, but she's the only one who's looking like it will take a lot to unstick her.
Do you feel like Rybakina is playing the better tennis at the moment than Świątek?
I think if they played tomorrow, I'd put money on Rybakina, just because I think she's got the confidence playing against Iga, and I think there was a lot of problem solving in Rome in that second set. Even though Iga did get a bit of an injury, she started to figure it out. And I think if you can hit that many shots on a slow clay court past Iga, it's a lot drier here, it's a lot warmer here. The conditions really are better for her when it comes to clay court tennis.
And one player who is certainly making the most of the conditions, and I feel is the player who maybe has had the most noise. Not Sana Rirani. I mean, not noise from me, but Mira Andreeva, the 16-year-old qualifier. She is going through the draw, absolutely tearing it up. She defeated Diane Parry today, 6-1, 6-2 to get to the third round. Really enticing matchup there against Coco Gauff. Some people saying, could that actually be a night match? Could it actually? Are we actually going to get a women's match as the evening match? I mean, that to me is a very fascinating matchup, given the amount of pressure Coco Gauff has been under, you know, coming into the spotlight as a teenager, and Andreeva seemingly going through the same motions. It's to me going to be very, very, very interesting. I mean, just going around being at the event, have you felt like the hype around Mira Andreeva, or have you been able to catch a glimpse of it?
I have seen her from a distance. She definitely does. I mean, I can't believe how young she is. I think it's so impressive the way she's able
to put
it together.
It's like Martina Hingis vibes.
It really is. And she gets it done. And I think that's something we saw in Madrid that's so clear, is that she gets the opportunities, and she isn't, as we've talked about Jannik Sinner, when you're younger and the pressure is off. I mean, when he played against some of the top players when he was young, you can swing freely. And I think she's very much in that same sort of stage of the career. And I think Coco talked about that as well, in terms of the pressure is off when you're younger. And now the pressure is on for Coco to kind of put together the results. And she obviously reached that French Open final. So I think it's very normal for, if you do have a young player who is supremely talented, like both of those women, then you do get those results early on. And then the more impressive thing than kind of the upsets such as Anisimova had at the French, where she had that great run to semifinals, is actually how you're able to back that up at the season afterwards. So I will have a question mark in terms of where we see kind of Mirasan kind of go with that. But in terms of that match, I don't think there's enough French interest in it. Coco is so loved wherever she goes. And I just came from her match literally just now before recording. And she was pretty competent. I thought she played great tennis, kind of didn't overcomplicate things at all, which was very, very good for her. And I think she has the interest, but I do think she would need to be playing against a French player. Because I think Andreeva might just be a little bit too unknown for the French crowd. But either way, if I had a ticket for that match, I think that would be fireworks.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Rinderknecht was the last French singles player left, because we had Caroline Garcia lose yesterday.
Did Jean-Jean lose today? I did not see the result.
I think she did. I genuinely think Rinderknecht's the last left. Well, so that can't be the night session strategy.
Honestly,
forever.
Honestly, the vibe, Joel, has been French people have been apologising to me for the French players. They were saying that none of them are doing well, and it really is a bit of a state. And I mean, it is. My friend that I'm here with, Alina, actually thought that someone was working in the gift shop, turned out to be Richard Gasquet. So maybe he has actually taken that opportunity to, you know, supplement the income. But no, it's been pretty tough for the French players. And obviously Garcia losing early, that was a really big upset, but not surprising, I would say, on paper, an upset. But it's not it's not a happy hunting ground for the French. No. So maybe it's time for them to take on some new names and new people.
I mean,
as
maybe
their
that's
own.
Why they're so. Maybe that's why they're so restless in the crowd. I do think, you know, hearing the interactions.
It's very Aggie. Tensions are high from the off.
It's more Aggie than usual. But yeah, I mean, one result that I was interested in was the Madison Keys result before we go to a quick break. But Kayla Day came through, upset Madison Keys, 6-2, 4-6, 6-4. Chris, to me, this was the quintessential Madison Keys performance. 40 winners, 74 unforced errors in her loss. She can go from lights out tennis to scary tennis on the other end of the spectrum, I feel like, within a click of the fingers.
She really can, and it is so concerning because she's such a great player, but her time in terms of when I think she will be peaking is slightly running out, in the sense that if she hasn't been able to kind of control that power, then when would she be able to? And you'd hope that would come with maturity, and it hasn't quite delivered. I think someone like Rybakina is a great example for Keys because she's really playing with topspin, with margin. She's not going for broke as much. And kind of really allowing herself to make mistakes. And Kvitova talks about this. If you are a big hitter, you've got to be prepared to make errors. And it's how you respond to that. And I think, unfortunately, we see it time and time again at the moment, is that going for so much isn't always the right plan if it's not working. And that plan B is not necessarily something that Madison Keys actually does have. Or I would say, and this could be a little bit harsh, has ever really had. It has to be plan A. And then plan A is sensational. But plan B... reads like the statistic you just mentioned, where, I mean, no one should be hitting 70 unforced errors in a match.
Unless you're Ostapenko. No.
But she'd hit 70 winners.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, that does bring me on to one kind of final question before we do go to that break. There's been some talk around the fact that there's been so many seeds, you know, dropping out, you know, Daniil Medvedev, but particularly on the women's side. Do you think there's anything to do or any correlation with the back-to-back Masters two-week formats for Madrid and Rome, and how exhausting potentially being in those Grand Slam-like environments are then coming to this? Do you think some of the top players are just like a little bit, you know, knackered from that setup, and they're not coming into the French Open as fresh as, say, before, when it was a more condensed format for those top tier events?
I mean, I'm not a player, but it has felt a bit like a slog from a fan perspective, in terms of just how kind of dragged out some of these last tournaments have been. I do think it's hard when you have kind of the three almost slam-like tournaments back-to-back to bring it every tournament. Medvedev had a great one. He's had a not great one here. He felt really confident on the clay, and it didn't kind of pan out for him here. So I think I was listening to kind of what you said about that match, and it was a case someone played out of their skin. But the nature of the game is that there are so many players who can cause an upset. And across those three tournaments, I mean, getting a win, getting a first round, and getting a quarterfinal, I think it was maybe, is actually a pretty good result when you average it out. But I think it'll be interesting to see if the players who played all three will be able to get the best results here, because obviously some players didn't play them all, and maybe that will lead to kind of a bit more freshness. Because I don't know, what do you think, Joel? Has it been a bit of a slog this clay season?
I think it has, and I still think it's just the competition is so high and it goes so deep that maybe before in kind of, you know, weaker eras of tennis, if you're a top 10 player, yeah, maybe you could have a bit more of a comfortable, you know, route in. But I think the fact is now the players who are playing in those, you know, lower rankings, you just can't expect to, you know, see yourself in week two. You really have to take it one match at a time. And I think that to me is one of the reasons why we're seeing these shock results. So, but I do think mentally though, having those back-to-back two-weekers, it must have an effect. So I'm curious to see if any players come out and talk about it more.
So someone like Ons, who hasn't played that deep in the tournaments, could she be springing an upset? Because she got a really good win today. She looked very fresh.
I've been surprised with how well and how comfortably actually Ons Jabeur's come through her first two rounds. But it'd be very interesting to see, because she could very well be peaking at the right moment. But we're going to take a quick break now, but join us in the second half where we'll look back on day four from the French Open. So don't go anywhere.
The Boodles is back. After a 3-year break, the ultimate pre-Wimbledon tennis event is returning to Stoke Park from the 27th of June to the 1st of July.
And we're offering one lucky Tennis Weekly listener the chance to win a pair of stadium passes to join us at the Country Estate for a day of world-class tennis in an English garden party setting.
Where you can sip champagne, dine in style, and mingle with your favourite tennis stars, including
Stefanos Tsitsipas,
Andrei Rublev,
Felix Auger-Aliassime,
Seb Korda,
Lorenzo Musetti,
Hubert Hurkacz,
and even more top players to be confirmed in the coming weeks.
The Boodles is located just 35 minutes from central London, and every seat in the stadium is no more than 10 metres from the court, giving every guest the ultimate fan experience on one of the UK's finest grass courts.
Tickets start from £90 and attendance is strictly limited to 2,000 per day, so booking early is advised to avoid disappointment. To book, visit their website, theboodles.com.
And for your chance to win a pair of stadium passes, all you have to do is follow us on social media at Tennis Weekly Pod, like our competition post, and tag a friend that you would like to come with you.
Maximum 2 entries per person, 1 per social channel on Instagram and Twitter. The competition closes on Sunday the 4th of June at midnight. Winners will be announced on our 4th round catch-up on Tuesday the 6th of June, so listen in to find out if you are a lucky winner.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, sponsored by the Boodles. And now we're going to move back to day 4, Chris. And yeah, we're going to pick up where we left off. Shocks galore still on the women's side. Yelena Ostapenko and Caroline Garcia both losing. Garcia lost to Blinkova 7-5 in the third. Yelena Ostapenko lost to Peyton Stearns of the United States. What did you make of these results? How surprising were they for you? Because you alluded to earlier, the Garcia result was not as surprising as perhaps you might expect, you know, when you look at it on paper. What about the Ostapenko result? Was that a surprise?
Well, Garcia, they're in the same section of the draw. So none of us picked Garcia to kind of come out of that because of the fact she hadn't had the form, the pressure's on, and she said she hadn't been the best headspace. So for me, not surprised. Pleased she got a win, but obviously ashamed to go out the way that she did. I was a bit, and I do always wonder why she won't take a step back on the return, because it is just so make or break. Taking it that early is so hard to do consistently. And we saw it at the Billie Jean King Cup. Like, it's not consistently something that works.
It feels very exaggerated, particularly on the second serve, how far she is in.
And it wasn't working. Every now and again it did, but that's a shame. But on the Ostapenko result, Peyton's someone that has been putting together some really good form. So I thought maybe it'd be a 7-5 sort of set. Maybe there might be a close set involved and then Ostapenko would come through. But she pushed Sloane all the way in Rabat the week before. And Sloane was playing well on clay. And that was 7-6 in the third. Sloane actually saved 3 match points to come through that. And based on seeing Sloane play as well, Sloane is playing some of the best tennis I've seen her play in years. And to push someone like who's as competent on clay as Sloane to 7-6 in the third, and to really dig as deep as she did, I mean, she's obviously really confident and playing good tennis and not afraid of someone who's going to, you know, have a really heavy ball. And I'm really pleased for her, because that was one where at the end, again, these do get really hard to close out. But for Ostapenko, you have to think, she was being talked about. I had her in my final. Will she ever, you know, get back to that level that she was at before? Or was that just all the stars aligning at one point? And the same thing where when you're young, and not young, but younger, I should say, you're able to play like you don't have a care in the world, and a bit like a Mira Andreeva when Ostapenko at the French. And now it becomes a little bit harder when those opportunities might not come around as frequently.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it was impressive, I think, from Stearns, because this was her first overseas Grand Slam. She made her debut
amazing.
Last year.
I didn't
year,
even know that.
Yeah, at the US Open. So maybe she's just come over here with that, mentality of no one expects anything from me.
Ben Shelton in Australia. First time
exactly.
Abroad.
arguably the biggest shock was not in the singles. It was in the doubles, because Krejcikova and Siniaková went out in round one. They have won the last 3 Grand Slams on the trot. I think this was the first loss of the year for them. They lost to Akari and Hizumi forgive my doubles knowledge, I don't know too much about them. But yeah, it's just not going right for Krejcikova at the moment. I know, I think Siniakova's had a few injury issues recently. But yeah, they would have been, I think, quite devastated by not having a good tournament. And potentially they could have completed a non-calendar career slam.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a really unfortunate one for them. I mean, they could have done almost like the Serena slam, the Krejcikova slam, or the Siniakova slam, it could have been called. But unfortunately, that didn't pan out for them. Siniakova was injured and was a doubt to play. So I do think it's probably injury related, because there's no way that that would be a result you'd see regularly.
Yeah.
But they haven't been playing as much on the tour because of kind of the fact that they are obviously ranked differently. It's sometimes hard to get that time in the tournament schedule to line up. And also they are prioritizing singles. So it could be a case where you can't just necessarily just play the big tournaments and always expect to come out with the win. So a big shock. Krejcikova going out in the singles was a big shock to me too. So clearly she's not playing as well as she would like to, irrespective of kind of Siniakova's fitness. But yeah, I mean, we might see some big surprises when it comes to final weekend here in Paris in the doubles.
Absolutely. I mean, one of those surprises could it be Elina Svitolina? You had a chance to to watch her yesterday. What did you make of her? What have you made of her, and how well she's taken back to tour life?
Yeah, Svitolina, I think she's playing differently. She's not pushing. She had a little bit of a habit of pushing. She's really attacking. And I think that's something that's so nice to see, that she really is going for it. I think she's got got it between her teeth. And I think from watching her play, I don't think there's any reason why with her draw, she can't go really, really far in this tournament.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see.
And Joel, before you go on, we didn't predict or mention her name in the preview pod, which therefore means she's not cursed.
No, she's not. No, she's not. I don't think Sloane Stephens is cursed either. So, you know, they could...
Don't say anything.
I mean, looking at the men's side, we're getting to a point where that top half is a little bit of a contrast to the bottom half. We had Novak Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz coming through. I mean, Carlos Alcaraz did drop a set. But they came through. Cam Norrie as well against Lucas Pouille in straights. I thought that was a much better performance than what he served out against Benoit Paire. There was a little bit of controversy though, because there was a double bounce that wasn't caught by the umpire.
Yes, I saw that. I was there for that. And we all thought it was a double bounce. And it was right in front of the umpire. And it's one of those...
Yeah, that's what I was confused by. It was like...
It was really obvious.
How did they not spot that?
Well, and also, it doesn't look good, does it? I mean, Cam's already not necessarily everyone's favourite for some of the on-court behaviour lately. Definitely not the favourite in Djokovic's books at the moment. And I don't think he won himself many fans with that one, because you know when you've done it.
Do you think that? Do you think he knew at 100%. That moment?
100%. There's no way you don't. From my experience playing tennis and the way that the ball bounces and the way that the spin works, Roger Federer gave us that lesson years ago when he explained to an umpire why it had double bounced. When Tomek Berda could actually hit it, so the top spin cannot be done if it hasn't bounced. So it's bad form, and I think he got away pretty lightly from a booing perspective from the French crowd, because I think we were all in a bit of disbelief at that point. But yeah, Pri had his day in the sun. That was a real non-event on Susan Longloy. That was a bit of a shame, because...
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I was watching the third set, and Pui was... He was knocking on the door of making it interesting. And I thought Cam Norrie did very well to keep
the door.
A lid on
he
it.
He did close the door. And it could have got out of his hands, because the crowd was really up for being a menace to Norrie in that one. But he must be like, please, not another French home favourite. Please, no. Surely... Mm. Surely all the French players have gone now.
I know. I think the French crowd may be a little bit desperate in terms of, like, we need another French player now. There's so few, not doing particularly great. I mean, you just touched on Cam Norrie opening up the beef again, you know, with Novak Djokovic. They had that tense match recently when Norrie hit Djokovic, I think, with a smash. And he's come out fighting, hasn't he? Because he said Djokovic kept him waiting. On the court, he was late and he didn't receive an apology.
If I was Norrie, I would probably just say that the reason why I hit Novak Djokovic was because I was annoyed he was late. I'm not sure that's necessarily the way things work, but whatever gets you fired up before a match.
When they next play, I just want Norrie to just make, hey, I'm now going to be like 11 minutes late to our match.
I think based on some of the behavior we've seen, I don't think it would be beneath him to do that. But Joel, what I would ask is if I'm 11 minutes late to the podcast, does that mean there'll be repercussions for me? I was late for this one.
Yeah. Yeah, you
finished a bit late for me.
Absolutely. We're on a tight ship here. No. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, great to see. I think Cam Norrie's still in there it was a bit of a bumpy start, I think, for the Brits. So good to see he's still kind of flying the flag. I mean, a player who's been in rank form over, well, really kind of all this season, Diego Schwartzman, quite nice to see him coming through as well. He's into the third round. Kokkinakis as well. Defeated Stan Wawrinka.
That was
in five
a fiery
sets.
Encounter on Simone Mathieu, right by where I am now. That was I've never seen cues for a match like that. That was something else. I think everyone saw that as being the drama surrounding that, as well as to see kind of a former champion up close. I think that had a great draw and that delivered, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I'm not going to lie, I feel a little bit happy for Kokkinakis in the sense, you know, he obviously had that heartbreaking five-set loss at the first Grand Slam of the year against Andy Murray. So I feel like he'll see like this is almost kind of levelling out.
The veterans tour. I mean, who's he going to play at Wimbledon? Who's coming out? Is Cilic coming back? Will it be him that will put him out of the tournament? Who knows?
I did like Chris, before we take a look at the order of play for tomorrow, I did enjoy, I don't know if you've seen photos of this, Alejandro Davidovich Fekina. He also won, he's through to the third round. He's got kind of the Marvel raccoon rocket from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's got like a little, toy in his bag, I think, that he carries. And he had a moment with his kind of stuffed toy after beating Luca Van Asch and kissed, you know, he gave him like a little kiss. And there's just some really funny photos of it. Just got me thinking of like any other kind of superhero animals or toys that you could bring to the court as maybe as like a little good luck charm.
I think if he could, he'd bring his four cats. I think someone tweeted that this man has two cats and he said, actually, I've got four. So,
oh, interesting.
I mean, he's a four cat man. That's all we can say about that. And I think we can assume he's maybe slightly eccentric in that sense.
It feels like that's got to be his good luck charm. You know, Sinner had the Carotta boys, but, you know, Fekina's got his own Marvel.
The cat lads,
rocket.
It could be, yeah. Maybe.
Oh, the cat lads, yes.
The cat crew, no.
I mean, just before we get on to the order of play, just a quick word away from Roland Garros. Emma Raducanu was announced today that she has split with her coach, Sebastian Sachs. That's her fifth coach in less than 2 years. She came out on Twitter and said, I've really enjoyed Seb's coaching and working with him. It's unfortunate that circumstances made it unfeasible for both of us to continue right now, and we have decided to part ways. I wish Seb all the best moving forwards. A quick word. This doesn't feel like a surprise, given she's injured. I'm assuming her coach needs to earn a living. Can't do that with a player who's on the injury list. It feels fair enough.
Yeah, it feels quite cut and dry. She's out. He wants to be a coach who's working with a player. He's someone who probably wants to keep on building up the profile of people he's working with. And especially working with Raducanu, who knows what the situation will be when she does come back. There's no date for that yet. And not saying there should be, but it feels like they did have a good start. They do like each other, and maybe they will partner in the future. But we're yet at another coaching crossroads, and I think it's something that we can probably deal with when her comeback starts to build some momentum, which will hopefully be this year, and hopefully with the coach that will stick around.
I mean, dare I say, being injured and off the court, maybe there could be a little bit more planning involved with, you know, that coaching decision making, because obviously it's happened, I feel, a lot of the times on the tour when it's been going on, and, you know, it's been from one to the other. But perhaps with a little bit more time off the court, there's, you know, a little bit more can go into kind of the planning and what we want to achieve and all that sort of stuff in relation to the team and how it's set up ready for her to come back further down the line.
Yeah, exactly. I think she's in slumber mode. She's going to be getting the right team together, and then she'll be taking it all in my
book. Is she in slumber mode? Because I read the other day she's off to China for an exhibition. I don't know what capacity she's going
to
be.
She also made it
there,
to but a Dior event in Mexico. So slumber mode is different for many people. For me, it's a lot less activity. But Joel, before we go, I was just going to say, I want to introduce a new segment of the show very quickly. Mm-hmm. Something that I do with my friends and my family is the three P's, your pit, your peak, and your pleasant surprise. And I thought it could be a bit of fun to throw in my peak, my pit, and my pleasant surprise of my time at Roland Garros. Yeah.
Makes sense. Hit me
with
it.
It's not a quiz. You can't lose, Joel. So that's an easy one for you. But my pit, unfortunately, would have to be that I did actually have an incident with a table that collapsed on me, which actually knocked over my champagne, which was a real buzzkill.
Somebody think of the Moe.
I know. I did get a replacement for anyone who's worried. And for Kim, also, I went straight back up there and sorted that one out. But my peak has got to be Sloane. I can't not say Sloane and seeing her play so well. And in the sun, being back in Paris, it was absolute bliss.
Of course.
And the pleasant surprise was that we managed to get on to watch Rublev on Simone Mathieu against Mute. And the queues were long. But anyone who is here or is planning to go, my top tip, if you want a pleasant surprise, would be to go to M1 gate at Simone Mathieu, because there is never a queue and it's in the shade in the morning. So that's my top tip. If you want a pleasant surprise.
Those are the tips the listeners came for. Absolutely.
Exactly. And also check your table before you put a glass of expensive anything down.
Well, I mean, very quickly, day 6, order of play is out. Surprise, surprise. We've got another men's match in the night session. Carlos Alcaraz, Denis Shapovalov.
I'll be there. I'm looking forward to it. Did you want to know something, Joel? When I booked the ticket for the evening match, I said it'd be nice to see Carlos on that Friday. And somehow it's come true. That was in February. It was in February or something whenever tickets came out. So
are you seeing any challenges, any troubles there? Shapovalov living up to his ceiling at the moment.
A four set would be great. Mm. I'd like to see Shapovalov at least play one set really well. That would be ideal.
I mean, there's a few quite tricky tests, I think, because Djokovic does have Davidovich Fekina in his, you know, in his match. He's third on Philippe Chatrier. I also think that could be a bit of a tester. We've got Sabalenka, Rakimova, and Mertens Pegula. Stearns Kasatkina is on Longlen with Sonego Rublev, Sloane Stephens, Yulia Putintseva, and then we've got Schwartzman, Tsitsipas, Musetti, Norrie as well. I think that's going to be a real tough one.
That's a good ticket
for Cam. Musetti, I think, has been playing well. I think he had a very
easy... beaten him recently,
Exactly. So we'll have to wait and see. Blinkova, Svitolina as well.
It's opening up for Svitolina. There's a story. There's stories brewing, aren't there? Comeback stories.
We'll see. But it's very exciting. I think we're getting, despite I think all these kind of seeds dropping out, I'm still looking at the schedule and thinking, damn, there are some really interesting matchups, I think,
there
still
are
on the schedule.
The Argentinians are on their way past me, so there might be some songs being sung. But no, I think whatever happens, there are some fantastic players that are still in the draw. And looking forward to it.
Yes, we'll see how things develop. But listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action still to come from Roland Garros. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And you can also follow us on social media, and you can follow what I'm up to in Paris. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can email the show, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, or check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back on Saturday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our round 3 French Open catch-up brought to you by the Boodles. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.